106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I'm your new host, Moon Lady, and you are listening to episode 22 of the Cut Print Film Podcast. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Hi, you, the listener. It's episode 22 of the Cut Print Film Podcast. I'm Dave.
I'm Jeff Rollins.
And I'm Chris Evangelista.
One day
we're maybe all going to get our last names in, and then we're going to just retire.
You know, we're going to dismantle the set. Yes, the set. I call everything a set because I live in the Truman Show.
You live in the movies. We could just all get married.
What's that?
And then we'll have the same last name.
We are all married.
Oh. When did this happen?
No, not to one another.
Oh.
Not yet.
We're married to women.
We could just start like a gay, like, polygamist thing.
We could.
Yeah.
But we're already married.
Yeah, we're not going to do that.
Hey, everybody, this is the Film Podcast.
This is Trainwreck Central.
Once again, let me just remind the audience that this is a podcast about films and not any of the garbage you just heard us talk about.
Yeah, not about lunatics.
Is films the proper one? Because I always struggle with that when I'm writing my reviews.
What?
Films or film or movies?
Depends on if you're talking about plural.
Or cinema.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or cinemas.
I call them flicker shows.
I call them Nickelodeons.
Yeah. Penny Dreadfuls.
So you can read about
600 years old
those things at cutprintfilm.com.
Yes, that's our website. And that's where we post all our movie reviews.
And it's much more structured than this podcast
so
far.
Right. So far, yeah.
Give us time.
Yeah, this week we all saw, what did we see, Dave? You tell me. I don't remember.
Richard Linklater's Boyhood.
Mm-hmm.
12 years in the making.
Yes.
Which I've kind of been excited for the last 7 years.
It's all you've been talking about since we started this podcast.
Yeah, and I feel like maybe that 7 years of hype has ruined the movie for me.
Yeah.
Because then as I'm watching it, I'm like, holy fuck, I've waited a long time for this, and it's just not connecting in the way I had hoped it would. But I don't think anything could have.
Yeah.
Unless I was hanging out with Ethan Hawke and he was my dad.
You were driving around in his GTO.
Yeah.
That was a sick fucking car.
It
was.
Bowling.
All right, just a little warning up front before we get into this. We're going to be talking spoilers.
He grows up.
Yeah. Yes. Spoiler.
He becomes a man. Yeah, a young man.
Yes.
A strapping young man,
he does.
I dare say.
He's just strapping things to other things.
Yeah, he can't stop strapping. Yeah. It's a very bizarre future where everybody has a specific job and he's a strapper.
It's Orwellian.
Yeah, it took 12 years to make, but it ends 12 years in the future. I don't know how he did this.
Very, very strange timeline.
There's a leap at some point.
Yeah.
All right.
So Boyhood tells the story of Mason
Junior, we'll
Junior,
call him,
yeah,
that's his name.
Do they ever say their last name?
I don't ever remember hearing it.
I don't remember it either.
Mason
Boyhood, I believe is his name.
Mason B. Hood. Mason B. Hood.
It starts and he's
five years old.
Five?
That's what IMDb says.
All right, that seems a little young. I would say he was like seven.
I thought he was six because I think it ends when he's 18 and is 12 years in the making.
Well, Jeff can do math, so he wins the prize.
All right. What's the prize?
The rest of this podcast.
This calculator.
I was hoping it was a hickey on my chest.
Oh. So it starts when Mason is six, as we just established 2 seconds ago.
Yes.
And then it goes until he's 18.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which he seems a lot older. There's like a block in there where it felt like he hit 18 and then was getting like older than I.
Those last few years kind of ran together.
Yeah.
But let's start at the beginning.
Right.
What did you think of the choice of actors? The central cast, which would be who?
Patricia Arquette is the first, like, besides Mason, the first real actor in the movie that we see.
Yeah.
And I could kind of tell that this was like a new endeavor and she hadn't worked this character out because at first, like the first block, Patricia Arquette is not good.
I would say the first block of the movie, everyone is not good.
Yes, I would too. Except I did enjoy Ethan Hawke in throughout the entire
thing. I don't think he's in the first
class. Yeah, I'm counting before he shows up.
Okay. Yeah.
The movie did not have me at all. I was sitting there and I was like, I am not enjoying this.
Yeah, it's almost like you're watching amateurs.
Yeah,
and
it felt like that.
Two out of the three are, but I'm not a big fan of any of the Arquettes, really. She grew on me as the movie went.
I think by the end of the movie, she's very good.
I think she becomes a better actress in real life by the end of the movie. So that's why we're seeing
her. But yeah, as the movie starts, she's not great. No one's that great. So
yeah, and like I said, I think it was the character develops more, so she has more to base her performance on, whereas they didn't even have the story. It's not like with a normal movie where you can see where the character's going to go, so you can kind of like weight your performance on that. She was literally just a single mom.
I mean,
that was her
character.
Yeah. She was growing.
She tells us that.
Yeah.
I was somebody's daughter and now I'm somebody's fucking mother. Like that.
Oh, yeah,
and
that is
her character in that first block of the film.
That scene in particular annoyed me because they were like having this very heated conversation, but while sitting, like, very politely.
Let me tell you what, I've had some rows with women throughout my life, and I've never had an argument screaming while we're both sitting.
Yeah, they never occur sitting
down.
With
your feet tucked up under you.
And without a gun in my hand.
You're usually throwing the dinner glass across the table.
Yeah, exactly.
I
don't like squash.
Ugh.
But I'll agree that the movie at first was like, what's happening?
The first 20 minutes of this movie are like the first 20 minutes of Rob Zombie's Halloween, where everyone's yelling and shrieking, and I just want to leave.
Yeah, and you're thinking, is this going to be the whole thing? But
thankfully, unlike Rob Zombie's Halloween, they stopped doing that in this movie.
Yes, and it gets better.
Yeah.
Then it grows on you.
Yes. Yeah, it really does. you're so happy
nice
with yourself.
Pun.
Yeah.
It was not even a pun.
Before we move on.
No, it wasn't.
That was the joke, guys.
Get out.
It was a double joke. Mm-hmm. Was anyone surprised that Patricia Arquette and Ethan Hawke were already divorced when the movie started?
No.
I was expecting it to be like the movie would just be the undoing of their marriage.
Yeah, I was too. I'm glad it didn't, though.
Yeah,
it'd be a much more depressing movie.
Yeah. I'm glad that it was already established that they were incompatible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we see that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool because that's the first of many kind of different directions the story goes in than a typical movie would. You know what I mean? Like, there's things.
It avoids paths that have already been, walked many, many, many times throughout movies.
Sometimes. There's one in particular we'll get to later.
Yeah. The other one was Ethan Hawke selling the car.
Right.
Like, there could have been a big emotional moment where he hands the car off, and that's like a thing.
I kept thinking,
but they avoided that.
After he gives this speech about how, he sold the car, and his son, the main character said, oh, you promised that car to me. I kept expecting also, because after that, there's a birthday party scene. I kept expecting him to be like, here's the keys. I was kidding. I didn't sell the car, and they didn't do that.
Because we've been trained so much through movies that's what happens.
There's a lot of instances where our training of lesser movies throughout the years makes you expect things are going to happen.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Mason, I believe, I'm going to say he's around 13 at the time. He's at a like a little party or a hangout at this abandoned house.
Oh, yes.
And there's a saw blade sticking out of the wall, and a couple boys are messing around, and they're right in front of the saw blade, and it's right by this one kid's head. And you think that the movie's going to have this traumatic moment where the kid gets pushed into the saw blade.
Yeah, I was expecting something like
or
that to happen.
Or the fucking saw blade, because they're throwing it into drywall.
Yeah.
Like, you would expect it to bounce up. But that's what's cool about this movie, is its realism. And
right, and nothing happens. Nothing
just like
comes
real life.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the saw blade's there, and nobody cares about it, and it plays no role in the film other than just being thrown, because boys like to throw sharp objects.
And we've all spent our childhood doing dumb shit, and it was a good way to bring that into the movie. But at the same time, I got that like feeling the way it was framed. You're just something
there's
horrible
a feeling
is gonna
of
happen.
Dread.
I mean, I appreciate. That's one of the things I appreciated most about this movie is that it was dead set on avoiding conflict. I would say there's a part where he's in the bathroom at high school and like these bullies
that
come up
cool
to him.
Too.
And I expected that to be like a plot point, like, oh, he's got to fight these bullies. And in my head, I was like, I don't want to fucking see that because that sounds stupid. And they didn't. It didn't happen. And I was like, I'm glad that didn't happen with the movie.
Right. Because How many fights have you ever been in?
Right. Well,
not. I mean, hardly any.
And a perfect.
But how many times has somebody like called me a bad name right. and threatened me? Plenty of times. But
yeah.
Nothing ever came of it, and I think this movie does a good job of, you know, making parallels with real life.
That was the thing. It was a smart scene because up until that point, all of his interactions with other children had been pleasant, and it shows you that's the point in life where kids start being
assholes.
Fucking assholes yeah. to each other.
Yeah, I would say the movie has a. It's a great. It's a cinematic way of showing an uncinematic life. Like, there are no yeah. big cinematic moments in
right,
this
movie. Right, there's no... There's one birthday, I believe.
Yeah.
But we don't see him graduate.
Right.
We don't see him lose
that's
his...
the other...
We
yeah.
don't see him lose his virginity.
Yeah.
A lesser film would do that.
Yeah, I was expecting that to happen.
There are no funerals. There are no weddings. Even though the mother gets married twice.
There's... It avoids... like typical story elements essentially, and I mm-hmm. found that strange at first. It was like a little jarring, like, oh, why aren't they like exploring his like all of a sudden they were just that dude Jim just disappears,
yeah, he's gone,
and it's like, why didn't they like develop that a little bit? Yeah. But it's just like that wasn't important to like Mason, obviously, because he didn't give a fuck.
I would like to say that the way that this film jumps ahead in time, I loved it because there are no dissolves. There are no
yeah.
like
it's very
cuts.
Natural.
There's no like year
yeah.
13.
Yeah,
and
there's
then,
no
like
subtitle telling you this happened. You're watching him at one age,
right.
and all of a sudden you go to the next scene and he's got a different haircut and he looks slightly older.
And
it's kind of like how memories actually work
yeah.
in your head. Like when you right. recall things, they're unorganized.
There's
I
no
mean,
transition in your memory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was cool too because like. Some of the transitions you couldn't even tell at first. And that's like real life too. Like you just don't even realize things have changed
yeah.
when they have changed drastically.
Right. Yeah. You think you're watching him at one point and then you see something in the background, like maybe his dad now has a mustache or something. And you're like, oh, this is a completely different point in his life.
Right.
There were some points in the movie where that hurt it just because other movies set up conflict out of nothing. Like there's a scene where he's up in Austin with his, I think he's with his sister hanging out at the college. And then all of a sudden he's taking down art and it looks like he's kind of stealing it at first. Did you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it like didn't
that
transition well.
That was,
yeah.
I think that was the only transition that didn't work.
And that's yeah. towards the end of the film.
Right.
Cause you're like, what the fuck is this? Yeah.
What did you think of the parents, the performances by Patricia Arquette and Ethan Hawke?
Ethan Hawke's amazing.
I think Ethan Hawke...
He makes this
if
film.
He weren't in this movie, I would not have liked it, honestly.
I'm going to argue. I know this film is called Boyhood, and I know it's about... is his name L.R. Coltrane?
Yes.
I know it's about him, but I think the parents have much more interesting character arcs than either child.
Ethan Hawke... Ethan Hawke sort of is like, he's like a magic trick in this movie, because every time the movie starts to lull, his character shows up again, and you're like, I'm so happy to see him.
Yeah.
And it sort of, it parallels how the kids would feel, like, oh, my dad's here again, I'm happy to see him. And
yeah.
it's like, that sort of
that
like,
is true.
It transitions to the audience. Like, I was like, I wish Ethan Hawke would show up again. Oh, he's here. I'm so happy to see Ethan Hawke.
I think it's fun to watch his character grow from being a kind of like, he's a drifting musician,
right,
trying to make it with music,
yeah,
and he really has no set path in life,
right.
He just goes from job to job.
I'll say this, that the movie could have been better had they not centered it on Mason and just centered it on the family, because I said to Chris after we left the theater, like, I felt at first like his sister was the more interesting character. Mm-hmm. And even through a good part of the movie, it's like, why is this called Boyhood? She
yeah,
gets just as much screen time and is growing. Like, she's devoted. It's like the same exact story. She's devoted 12 years to this role.
Mm-hmm.
You see her grow up on the screen. And it's like Mason has a little bit more of the narrative centered on him. But it could have easily gone the other way and been her movie.
My wife was saying, like, they should have called it Childhood. Like, that's a better title for
this.
Like,
I agree with that.
Because she was saying, like, she didn't know much about the movie. She said she thought it was just going to be about the boy. And
mm-hmm.
she was like, I'm surprised it was about his parents and his sister and stuff like that.
Well, did you guys read about the naming of the movie?
No.
It was originally called 12 Years, and then they changed the title to
Oh,
the
I wonder why.
Yeah. He's like, why couldn't it have been 13 years a slave? Like, it's Richard Linklater saying this. He's like, it couldn't have been 11 years a slave or 13. It had to be 12. Because for the 12 years, this movie, like the script and everything, just said 12 years on it. Like, that was the name of the movie.
Yeah, and that's this whole film. I've heard Linklater be referred to as a director that makes critic-proof films, because how can you critique this film negatively, given that pretty much everybody can relate to it somehow? This is – it's not a generic story, but it's a universal story. You can plug yourself into any character in this film. You can plug yourself –
we can.
Okay. Middle America.
Yeah.
Middle class America can, but I would.
Marcus might disagree with you. I never read his take on it, but
yeah, that's true. He's inner city.
Yeah, like a
I'm thinking of suburbs, but
any non-white urban childhood is going to be totally different.
That's
than
true. That's true. But okay, an enormous part of the population.
Yeah. I'll agree with that.
Plug themselves into this film. And
the people who see it.
Yeah, and let's face it, most critics are white male, by the way.
Yeah.
So it's just a hard film to speak negatively
A part of me feels like it's cheating almost.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I liked this movie.
I liked it too, but if this movie didn't have that, and I'm going to call it a gimmick, and it feels wrong to call that, but if it didn't have that gimmick of that it was filled over 12 years and you literally watch these characters grow up, it would be... it wouldn't be anything special. It doesn't tell a remarkable story. It's the simplest of stories.
I'll disagree with that. I like an observational movie more than
I do too. But I feel like the observation of this movie were pushing it. Like, did he really need to have two fucking drunken stepfathers?
Yeah,
like stuff like all that.
Right. While we're bringing that up, let's just jump off topic here. The performances by some of the supporting cast are just unacceptable. Unacceptable.
Right, so I remember after you saw it, you were saying there's one person in particular you did. So who is that person you thought was not?
Okay, well, there's two people, actually.
Okay.
One is a real quick one, which I think is the worst part of the entire film.
Yeah.
There's a Mexican-American character who is doing plumbing.
Yeah, he's changing a pipe.
Septic pipe.
Yeah, he's changing the sewer pipe for Patricia Arquette's house. And for some reason, she tells him that he's smart.
Which, again, why? I don't get that.
Out of the blue, she tells him, you're smart. You should go to school, get your degree. And
he's like, I work. And she's like, go to night school. And I was like, fuck you, Patricia Arquette, because that's still hard, you idiot.
And then cut to...
but that even was a fine moment. She's a professor. Like, she's just trying to amp this guy up a little bit.
Right. If that scene had been on its own,
that's
no
perfectly
problem.
Fine.
But
cut to 1 hour later... and we're at the end of the film, and Patricia Arquette...
night school in an hour.
Patricia Arquette is at a diner with her two children, and guess who comes up to the table suit?
Yes.
Or in a dress shirt and khakis.
Yes.
Is this former plumber who tells her, you may not remember me, but I did plumbing work on your house, and you told me that I was smart and I should go to school. And now I got my... what did he have, his associates?
He's working on his bachelor's.
He's working on his bachelor's, and he's managing this restaurant.
He's like, he said, you changed my life.
Yes, and
so your breakfast is on me.
And what? And my breakfast was in my lap because I threw up immediately.
That scene, I don't want to discount the movie for one scene, but that scene almost disrails the film.
It bothered me so much.
It's a bit like
it's unnecessary.
It doesn't fit the tone of the movie,
especially in a movie that's
one moment of the movie.
Especially a movie
complimentary to that.
A movie that's almost 3 hours long could easily afford to lose a scene like that.
Mm-hmm. But not even that. The whole movie is filmed in this kind of like fly on the wall manner, and then this scene is filmed weirdly like cheesy cinema. Like it has like that rom com feeling to it.
We're in When Harry Met Sally, and I'll have what she's having.
It was just bad.
It's horrible.
It's almost like at the last minute he felt like he was like, oh, I need to have some sort of theme that's some sort of like plot. It's like he felt like he needed to have a plot point to come back to for some reason.
I think it might be at a certain point you start thinking like, oh my God, we've been doing this for 12 years and like I'm not using that to the story's advantage at all. Like, why don't I bring some people from the beginning back?
You don't need to do that.
Of all the characters to bring back, you didn't... pipe guy was probably the least.
Yeah, and I read in an interview that they asked him how much footage got cut, and he said almost none.
Yeah,
see, that's
the issue.
So I think we're looking at about at least 15 minutes that could be cut.
If
from
any characters needed to come back, it would have been his like step siblings from that.
Yeah,
like that would actually been interesting if, as an adult, he runs into those kids somewhere.
Well, let's go back to them then, okay. Because that's my other problem with the film.
Okay,
can I hold you for one second?
Yeah,
because I have a theory.
Sidebar.
I've read about like the making of this film, and Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette have said that like up until the day before filming, they would be not even knowing what they were going to be filming,
okay.
And they would just kind of write all night. And I think this might have been one of those moments where somebody who wasn't Richard Linklater, be it Patricia Arquette or just a bad screenwriter that was helping out, threw this idea in, and they filmed
it.
Maybe it was the actor who played that character. He was like, how about I come back?
Or they just didn't have enough. Like, they scheduled that day where they have the dinner, and it was like, what do we do?
Maybe that guy really was the manager of that restaurant. Yeah, and they're like, what a coincidence.
It just happenstance.
Because that scene where they're having dinner actually is a good scene until that point. Mm-hmm. Because they're... Because
the daughter's hungover.
Patricia Arquette tells them that they're like adults now. It's a great
scene. There's
some
comedy in that scene where she's like...
And then here comes the plumber to just fuck everything up for me.
Yeah, I love that line where she's like, I'm gently pushing you out of the nest, and as you fall down, find some quarters. Like, I thought that to do laundry. Like, that was a really funny line.
Yeah.
And then this man shows up and totally derails the scene.
Okay, back to drunk stepdad.
Yeah. Okay, Mason Jr.'s first stepfather is a character played by Marco Perella. And
his name is Professor Bill Welbrock.
Yes, and the character's okay. The actor is just not suited for a role like this.
I didn't think he was too bad until he started to have to be like dramatic, and that's where it started. Like, when he was just being natural and like, show you how to golf. Like, that was fine.
That was fine. And when he was the professor in the classroom, that was fine.
Yeah, he was like a typical douche stepdad at first.
Yeah,
And then by the 14th shot of him pouring vodka into a solo cup.
A big cup.
I was like, can we just get to the scene that I know this is going to get to? Just get to the explosion?
At that point, I thought it was interesting because I was like, maybe they're not, because this, like we said before, they've been avoiding the typical trappings of
defying convention.
And I was like, maybe this guy is just a fucking lush, like a real lush.
I thought that
who drinks vodka and Sprite all day.
I thought that the first time he poured the vodka, and then
because it's sort of amusing. Like,
I laughed.
Yeah, and the audience,
several people.
Yeah, the audience we saw it with was laughing.
He pours about 10 fingers of vodka into a solo cup,
like,
and then
a splash
of Sprite.
Yeah.
But, on like a hot summer day, it's like, oh.
And then he hides the bottle.
And then he's total dicks to the kids, yelling at them about their chores. And it's like, I could see this happening in real life.
Yeah, but
then he slams Patricia Arquette's head into a wall, which we don't see, thankfully.
Yeah, we just see
that
the
scene was
aftermath.
Kind of terrifying.
Was an upsetting scene.
The whole explosion was terrifying and tense. But the way this actor played that scene is just.
Where he yells,
like amateur.
He yells,
hour.
"I hate squash," which sort of made.
Oh yeah, it was like
that was a bad
almost.
Line because it was it's comedic, and that's not what that scene is going for.
Right, and it could have ended because he says, "You don't like me? That's all right. I don't like me either."
Yeah,
and like, that's a great line, and he played it perfectly. And then he throws the glasses at either kid, and then he stands up and says, "I hate squash," and I'm just like, "I hate you."
I hate this scene.
And it felt a little strange him throwing the glass too, because it's like, holy shit.
It's a little
shit.
Extreme.
And,
like,
yeah, like if that happened,
let me tell you something right now.
You'd be up and out of it.
My mom would have been at his throat with a knife.
And that's the thing, is Patricia Arquette's character up to this point has been defined as a pretty decent fucking mother.
Yeah.
Like her character in that scene doesn't fit. Like, the whole time, I'm like, what's happening?
She's too mousy, but...
I'll also add... Oh, sorry,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, keeping with that theme, that it sort of the following scene, I think, betrays her character, too, where she fucking... She basically leaves the house to move out, but she leaves her kids with this guy all day, and that seemed like wrong.
No, any normal mother would have had all four kids up and out of the house.
Like, yeah, she just she leaves for like an entire day to like, basically get set up with her friend. But she leaves her kids with this fucking guy.
This madman. Anything could have happened. And I did. That's what I was going
to
say.
I was like, yeah, that seemed like that rang untrue to me. But to her character.
How many years did they spend with that guy? Only like two at the most.
I think it was 2 years.
So that's the other thing is while watching the movie, it felt like a more significant amount of time. But it kind of makes sense. Like, she's not that attached to those kids.
Yeah.
To the point where she could be like, hey, we're all going to live together now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it is one of those things, like, that would be a really complicated situation in real life. Like, what would you do?
I don't even mean taking his kids, too. It's just the fact that she left her two kids with this
guy.
Yeah,
I understand.
That alone is just weird to me. But, I mean, again, I've never been in that situation where I need to flee a drunken madman. So maybe under those circumstances, she did the right thing. I don't know.
Well, I don't want to beat up on the film too much because I do think it's a good movie. There are some great scenes.
It is
I'd
a
like
good
to,
movie.
Touch on.
It felt the whole experience, like at least the first two acts, felt like nostalgia. The film,
yeah.
Like,
and I enjoyed that about it.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it to a fault, but at some point it started to get a little like, all right, enough with the remember when this happened.
Yeah,
and you can't really fault the movie because when they were making
exactly,
it wasn't remember when, that's just what was happening.
And that's what's kind of genius about it is like things like Dragon Ball Z and then
the baseball game,
Roger Clemens, and like they didn't know Clemens was gonna get put on trial, and he's talking about this guy's 43, he's fucking striking out guys half his age, and it's like,
sure was.
Yeah, he's on steroids and this is gonna be a big thing.
and
I was kind of excited. I'm like, I hope they come back to this Roger Clemens thing because it looks, it's funny in hindsight. The other thing was
the Star Wars. Or was like,
yeah, that was.
You ever think they'll make another Star Wars?
And I liked that because that came off so natural as
a father and
son bonding. And
yeah, the kid, what's it, Eller Coltrane and Ethan Hawke? They have a fantastic chemistry.
They really do.
Like they really seem like their father and son.
Even Ethan Hawke and Samantha, the character.
He has good chemistry with everyone in this movie.
Linklater.
Yeah, that's his daughter?
That's his daughter.
Oh, wow.
It's shocking.
A.K.A. Aubrey Plaza clone.
Right. But I was surprised at how good she was in this film.
Yeah, she's going to have a career after this.
Yeah, when the movie started and she was, you know, a screechy little girl, I was like, I don't want to fucking spend time with this character. But as the movie progresses, she becomes really good.
Yeah.
I liked how Linklater tried to show how Ethan Hawke's distant father tried to at first bond with his kids by just lecturing them, like giving them these like lectures about like this is what you
like
gotta
life.
Do. Life doesn't give you bumpers like they're at the bowling alley. And then I like how the character, as he spends more and more time with his kids, he just has these natural moments and they're like more subdued ways of bonding. And I feel like a kid gets more out of that type of bonding with their parents.
Well, there's like a specific moment where he pulls the car over and then they like kind of say to him like, why don't you talk to us about yourself?
Yeah,
that was a great scene.
Yeah.
It was excellent. He's asking them what they've been up to since he last saw them the week before, and they're like, nothing. And he pulls the car over and he's like, no, we're not going to have that relationship. And I think it's from that moment forward that he actually makes more of an effort to, you know, have one-on-one time.
And he starts like
one-on, you know, just him talking to them.
He actually becomes like a better dad too.
He becomes a great dad.
I think. It's tough to gauge anything in this film, like in terms of
We get 3 hours to spend 12 years with these people.
Because it's like I feel like the lack of Patricia Arquette in the back end of the film makes her seem like she's not that good of a mother because she seems very career oriented.
Yeah, there's a scene near the end where Ethan Hawke is talking just about, you know, life in general, and he's talking about their failed marriage. And that scene bothered me a little because it was like that scene just felt like it was throwing Patricia Arquette's character under the bus, and it felt unfair.
Is that when
me.
He's talking to his son at the music club?
Yeah, where he's just like, oh, she was crazy and stuff. And it's like, it felt kind of like it was like this typical male perspective, and it sort of bothered me.
There were parts of that scene I liked about how he's talking about girls.
Right.
Yeah.
and I like that part of it. But yeah, I agree.
Like, it feels like
the mother. She was a fantastic mother. She got her children out of dangerous situations and raised them both. And yeah, that seemed kind of undeserved.
It felt like at the end they were sort of shortchanging her, which is kind of unfair.
Yeah, and it's but like you kind of know from the subtext of the film, you get that there's scenes in between where she's being a good mother.
Right.
You just don't get to see them.
Yeah.
And it on the other end, it's like you know. You're getting to see the moments where Ethan Hawke's a good dad, but you know there's these huge chunks where he's not there, and that kind of makes you
I think
he's not that great of a dad, actually.
Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, like I wish there had been a few scenes where you got to see Bridget Arquette be
like hang out with
a
her
nice
kids.
Because like one of my favorite scenes in the movie is the scene where Mason and Ethan Hawke's character they go camping, like that whole camping sequence. I hate camping,
but this
scene made me nostalgic for camping, which I fucking loathe.
Yeah.
But watching the scene, I was like, I wish I had gone camping with my dad, and if I had, I would have hated it. But watching the scene, I was like, this is wonderful. But there's no scene like that with Patricia Arquette.
Right.
And
it speaks a lot about the film that my two favorite scenes are involving Mason and his father.
Right.
There's a scene in the beginning where they're driving together. It's like literally the first scene with where they're together other than walking at the school, and they're kind of like having like a funny conversation. I mean, it's her and a 6-year-old,
right?
But that's it other than conflict.
Yeah, most of her role in the movie is to be like a nag, which seems unfortunate
and unfair.
Yeah,
because the character, I don't know, I enjoyed all four of the principal cast. I enjoyed every character.
What were your two favorite scenes? Were you gonna say them?
The first one was the scene where Mason, I think it's his 13th or 14th birthday, and the gifts he receives are a Bible,
gun,
and a suit.
Yes, yeah. I love that scene.
Go to the lake, and Ethan Hawke perfectly skips a rock.
Yes.
And I just love that scene. I loved everything about the scene.
It's a funny scene because you could tell that he loves this woman, and it's his second wife at this point, and he's not religious at all.
And he's letting his kids know that he's still the same guy, but, you know, maybe leave the gun with me and don't show your mom.
Yeah.
Looking back, like, immediately after the film, I was a little disappointed in it because I had built it up so much. Mm-hmm. But I think as I let this movie, like, almost like the way the movie is memories, I'm remembering it right now from 5 hours ago when I saw it, like, I have a better feeling about it than I did while I was watching it.
I can tell you this before I tell you my other favorite scene. I saw it about a week before both of you, and originally my score was 7 out of 10. I thought it was a good movie.
Right.
But as I think about the movie in that week prior, it just keeps – I recall it more fondly. And
it's like a memory almost.
Exactly. And that says a lot about how good the film is.
Yeah.
And I'm not a Richard Linklater fan at all. Not a big fan of his work.
Neither am I.
But this is a hell of an achievement of a film.
I am very much a Richard Linklater fan. And I think it sucks because you guys, neither of you have seen the Before movies.
No.
Nope.
And Ethan Hawke is almost the same character in those movies. But he's a little less hateable because he's not. I don't know, because stuff happens off screen that's very similar to this movie. You could tell that they filmed that second Before movie and these at the same time because they have very similar story elements. But because you have Julie Delpy in those movies and she's a stronger actress than Patricia Arquette, like, I feel like those are still better movies than this.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've read that. Not seeing any of those movies, I can't say a whole lot.
Yeah.
So. Another thing, I feel like the movie was great. The first two acts were great, and then as he's in his teens, like high school, college years, it started
kind of meanders.
Repeating the same scene over and over.
We could have just cut a lot of it. There's a second drunk stepfather, who's a fine actor.
Well,
guy's a fine actor.
Before we get into that, what's your second favorite scene?
Oh.
And we'll go into that.
The scene with Mason and his father, and I believe they're sleeping on adjacent couches.
Oh, with the elf scene?
He asks his father, there's no real magic in the world, right, Dad? And Ethan Hawke's explanation of magic is
spot on.
It's just fantastic.
That's a wonderful scene.
Yeah, it was definitely an emotional scene, and it just – it rang – it hit somewhere. It hit something in my heart.
The whole movie is very emotional. Like, I felt it in my throat, like, even when nothing was happening. I was like, this... It's in the same way, like, sometimes a commercial will hit you weird, like, emotionally. It felt like that for 3 hours.
Yeah. See, I did not get that until the one scene that actually got to me is... He's about to go to college, and he's packing up, and Patricia Arquette starts crying. And that got to me, and I wasn't expecting that, and it just really, like, upset me. And I felt really bad, like, for that scene.
What did you think of them, because that's the last time you see Patricia Arquette.
Right.
What did you think of them closing the door on her character like that?
I don't know. It made me a little unhappy, because, like...
It was weird, right?
Yeah, she's just like, leave me my picture, and then it just, like, cuts away. And I was like, oh, all
and that's
right.
the last we see of her.
Yeah.
That's a straight... It made me really... Like, that scene... This is kind of personal, but, I mean, you might be able to relate to this. It made me happy that my mom is married. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I understand what you're
like,
saying.
I would... If she was sitting in an apartment like that, I'd be a little like, oh, shit. Like, because you feel so bad for her
but
in that moment.
I will say this.
I mean, maybe that's why I'm upset, because my mom is just sitting in an apartment right now. Cause...
But, I mean, Mason...
Sorry.
Mason...
Thanks, Dave. Thanks a lot. Thanks for making me feel things.
He makes the point that aren't you skipping ahead 40 years when she says she's just going to...
Just die.
The next
yeah.
step is just die. And I feel like they've shown how strong of a person that character is that you can just assume that she's going to do something
right.
more important than just curl up and die. Like, she's had... She's gone from poor mother, poor yeah. single mother, to a professor.
Right.
At some point. So you know that she has something going on after this movie ends.
That's true.
I hope so.
Well, hopefully it's not a murder-suicide, but...
It's another strange cinematic moment because you don't see Manson. Charles Manson.
Yeah, they actually cut those.
Skelter.
You don't see him at all in this movie.
Yeah,
it's weird.
There's no Sharon Tate or Roman Polanski
but you
in
always,
this either.
You always feel his presence.
You don't even get to see... Mason, like, console his mother. She breaks down crying, and then it cuts to him driving down the road.
Yeah.
But you know that scene's in between. He just doesn't be yeah. like, all right, Mom, see ya. Like, I'll be on the road.
Yeah, I'll be in my truck.
My yo truck.
I gotta go meet my roommate. He loves Bright Eyes.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
We're gonna do shrooms 4 seconds after meeting each
at
other.
Yosemite.
I wish the movie hadn't ended like
the
that.
The movie should have ended with him driving down the road.
I thought it was going to, and I was like, if it ends here, I will love this movie. But it ends with he goes to college and he meets three of the friendliest people in American history. They're just like... He goes into his dorm room, and his roommate's like, I'm great! And then his roommate's girlfriend is there, and she's like, I'm great!
And then
another
her friend shows up, and then somehow all three of those people have known one another for a long time.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Like, aren't they all freshmen? Like, we're all friends! And they give him shrooms, and they go hiking.
And the one...
I assume they just all went to
the roommate's,
high school together?
The roommate's girlfriend's friend says something that, like...
She's like, oh, they're great people.
She says the dude can be crazy sometimes.
Yeah. How do you know? Isn't this day one of college? You haven't even done orientation.
I got the impression that they were three high school friends that just went to the same college.
Okay.
I guess, but even that's a little weird to me, but I don't know.
Yeah, what is it, Saved by the Bell, the college years?
I did enjoy the, like, awkward closing moment, because, like, you're waiting for, like, the kiss, and then they don't give it to you.
I enjoyed that. There was so many things about this film that I enjoyed, and so few things I did not enjoy.
Yeah.
It's just a shame that the few things I did not enjoy were really, really bad.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of summing it up. It's a really good movie with some really bad parts, so it's sort of...
But you absolutely should see Boyhood. It's
without a doubt.
It's an experience.
I mean, it literally is unlike any movie ever made, so you obviously should see it.
I wanted to make one quick point. Going back to when I said that he's kind of critic-proof.
Right.
This film is critic-proof.
Right.
The other films throughout, like, cinematic history that have attempted something similar to this, such as Michael Apted's Up series, where it started with 7-Up, where he follows... every 7 years, he visits the same 14 children to see, like, where they've gone in life, and I think the latest one is 56 Up.
Right.
So all the children are 56 years old. Yeah, it's 8 movies now.
I've heard of this.
It's
I didn't realize they were at 56.
Yeah, these are real people, by the way. That is critically acclaimed. and Linklater's own Before series that you referenced, yeah. they're critically acclaimed.
But
and
even
they
they're good fucking movies.
They follow the same characters.
But even that, those are separate movies. This is all in one movie, which I think is what makes this the most unique.
And also French filmmaker Francois Truffaut with his The 400 Blows. Right. That follows the life, the fictional life of this character, Antoine Duanel. And there's, I think, 7 or 8 of those movies where the same actor plays this character.
And then, of course,
and they're critically acclaimed.
And then, of course, there's Harry Potter.
Well, yes, yes. There's Harry Potter and, as we all know, the Philosopher's
Stone.
That's
true, yeah. Harry Potter is featured in this film.
Yeah,
and does
a nice parallel.
Yeah, and Chris points out a good point that they almost do the same thing with those films.
Yeah.
You're getting to see...
I mean, they do. They're just over different films. You get to see those actors grow up.
Okay, and all those films, including Boyhood and Harry Potter, they've all pretty much been critically acclaimed.
Yeah.
Nobody's panning these movies. So I don't know if it's just the, like you said, for lack of a better word, gimmick. I don't know if it's the gimmick that...
The novelty.
That we, yeah, the novelty of it that we love, or if these are actually good movies. And I don't know that it matters either.
Yeah,
I just wanted to bring that up.
I mean, if it works while you're watching it, I guess it doesn't matter. I mean, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, I don't think it matters. Yeah. Whether it's a gimmick or not, these... It's just a fascinating concept, and so far we've had capable directors and actors presenting it to us.
If the gimmick works, it works. Yeah. I mean.
A lot of the time these films like this get rap for being critic-proof because there's like no real narrative to them. But I feel like this movie had like a strong... You connect with
there's
the characters.
Arcs. There's character
you know
arcs.
I mean?
There's 4 separate character arcs, and they're all pretty satisfying.
And to work a gimmick into a good character... study piece, like anyone could do the gimmick, but I don't think anyone could do it this well.
Okay, I'll agree with that.
Yeah,
I'll
concur.
If I could have picked 12 years ago, hey, pick a director to do this 12-year experimental thing, I think I would have picked Richard Linklater because he's the man for the job.
Yeah, sure.
If you say so, Dave. Or
J.J. Abrams.
Lens flare the movie.
He grows up so bright.
All right. Well,
okay.
I think this concludes our boyhood chat.
Yeah.
After the break, we'll be talking about our manhood.
That's right. Actually, we'll be talking about Hercules, which is what I call my manhood.
And also Lucy.
Yeah.
Which is what I call my manhood as well.
And San Diego Comic-Con 2014.
Which is what I call my manhood.
Oh, you stole that one from my mouth, my open mouth.
All right. We'll be right back, ladies and gents.
Hey, Jeff! How come you don't wear shirts in the podcast anymore?
Well, announcer, we recently had a devastating fire at my house and all my property was destroyed.
I know a cool website where you can buy t-shirts.
Oh, really?
T-Fury.com. Wait, www.tfury.com.
T-Fury offers a different, unique t-shirt every day for $11.
By unique, do you mean that it's unique in style or uniquely different from other t-shirts? Or will it just be a Doctor Who t-shirt?
I don't know! But they now offer t-shirts in a variety of colors! Sizes go up 2X! Plus $1 for women. 2X! Plus $1. And 3X! Plus $2 for men.
Okay.
What's that URL again?
www.tfury.com.
Out of sight!
Just watch Boyhood. What you think?
We just spent 43 minutes talking about that. You really want me to answer?
If you want to hear more songs like this, get the Boyhood soundtrack.
Go to cutprintfilm.fm.
We should have our own channel.
Yeah, we should.
Just 24/7. We're just DJing.
It's just this.
It's just this song over and over again.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, everyone.
What do you want to talk about?
So, really briefly, I will go into Comic-Con was this weekend, everyone.
That's right.
Well, it was not just the weekend, it was the week itself, but yesterday, Saturday.
It's a con movie about comics.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's about that movie.
Stand-up comedy.
They play Heist and The Score back-to-back,
oh,
those
good.
Two movies.
Is Kevin Hart in it?
Yeah.
All right.
So, Yesterday, Saturday, was the big Comic-Con day, because it was when they had all the big movies, the DC movies, the Marvel movies, all that stuff. So, I mean, I'm not big on this stuff, so I guess it seems a little underwhelming to me, but it was a lot of build-up for a lot of nothing. So Marvel, after all that build-up, they showed stuff from Avengers 2, and that's it. They didn't go into any of their new movies.
What did they show from Avengers 2? Because all I saw was that poster.
I thought, okay, good.
That's a poster.
They showed a scene from the film, and then they showed like it's like a sizzle reel, not like a trailer, but just like a bunch of scenes from the film. And I guess the biggest thing at
Comic-Con at a sizzler,
not a Ponderosa.
No,
they have a good salad bar and it's a great ribeye steak.
It's more of an old country buffet.
Oh, good diarrhea.
So I guess the biggest thing at Comic-Con yesterday was in the morning. California time.
That's right.
They showed a scene from Batman v Superman, The Legend of Curly's Gold. And
is that City Slickers too?
Batman v Superman, and it was a brief scene where he's doing
his laundry.
Yeah.
It's White's Day.
He's in the rain and he turns
and a red cape in the dryer and he's like, "What's this?
All my whites turned pink."
Batman, he turns the bat signal on because I guess he's the only one who does that in this movie. He doesn't have
which makes no sense.
He doesn't have anyone else to do it for him.
He calls himself.
He's very needy.
He turns the bat signal on and the spotlight hits the sky and Superman's up there and Superman's eyes glow red. And then everyone in Hall H lost their fucking minds because I guess they forgot Superman was in this movie, even though his name is in the title.
Yeah, and there was a whole 3-hour shitty movie about him 2 years ago. Yeah.
So everyone who was there is all a buzz, and they were like, "Oh, this was so cool." But honestly, at this point, there's nothing shocking about a Zack Snyder movie looking cool because looking cool is what Zack Snyder does best. He just can't tell a fucking story. So, I mean, and apparently this footage, Batman's wearing a bunch of like robotic armor, like he wears in The Dark Knight Returns by Frank Miller. And can I just say, can we please, for the love of God, get away from Frank fucking Miller? Frank Miller was cool in the 80s. He's not cool anymore. He's a fucking...
He hates women.
He's a misogynistic, racist asshole. There's no reason to keep going back to...
That's my Frank Miller button. Sorry.
There's no reason to keep going back to the Frank Miller well. There's been 20-plus years of comics of Batman since Frank Miller. Can we please just fucking get past it? So that's my big Comic-Con wrap-up. There was...
Anything else?
There was a trailer for Mad Max, which is actually online now, which is actually
very cool.
Really good.
I've been hearing great stuff. I haven't watched it yet, but I've been hearing great stuff.
It's on CupRinFilm.com.
It is on CupRinFilm.com.
This has been a great weekend for me. I haven't been on CupRinFilm.com at all.
it's an excellent trailer. That's really it. They announced...
Bane's in it.
Yeah, Bane is in it.
I was born in Australia.
That's what he says.
Oh, there was an image of Wonder Woman released from Batman v Superman, and she looks fucking miserable.
I did see that. I also saw already the memes are running wild. I saw the Xena Warrior Princess meme.
That's what she looks like. She looks like, and of course, because this is a Zack Snyder film, she looks like a stripper, and you can see like, you know, everything.
Oh, yeah, she's wearing high-heeled boots, right?
Yeah, because that's really practical when you're fucking, and of course, she's standing in a apocalyptic wasteland, because that's what Zack Snyder fucking does best.
Gotham.
Yeah. So yeah, Comic-Con, everyone.
All this Comic-Con news, like I found myself getting annoyed. I was like, oh, all this fucking news is about comic book movies. And then I was like, oh yeah, that's right.
It is called Comic-Con.
It made me wish there was some kind of con for real movies. Where like
there is just called Con Film Festival.
No, but
it's good night, everybody.
That's why it's called that. Con.
Well, con. No, but like just like a fucking film fest.
No, I know what you're saying. I wish there was like a big weekend for other movies besides comic.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have a problem with comic book movies, but after yesterday, I am so fucking burned out. I don't want...
I mean, like something where it's all news about upcoming
awesome trailers. Yeah. Like Christopher Nolan comes out.
Yeah,
and
people
like,
get excited for movies other than comics.
Christopher
books.
Nolan did come out at Comic-Con.
He was at Comic-Con.
He was?
Interstellar. Not yesterday, on Friday, he was there.
He and Matthew McConaughey surprised everybody.
Oh, wow.
And they shoot a new Interstellar trailer.
Were they dressed as the True Detectives?
No.
Yeah.
No, they weren't.
True Detective Season 2 is Matthew McConaughey and Christopher Nolan.
My other thing, I think the Marvel one was lackluster because I think that they were planning on having the deal sealed with Joaquin Phoenix,
yeah,
and it's not going as well as they had hoped.
Yeah, pretty much everyone agrees that the Marvel presentation was really lacking, because basically the way yesterday worked is the morning was Warner Brothers and DC and Legendary Pictures, and then they took a big break for a few hours, and they came back. And basically Twitter, for like those 3 hours before Marvel came back, it was like, I can't wait for Marvel. Everyone there is like, Marvel's going to kill it tonight. I can't wait. Marvel came back. They briefly talked about Ant-Man. And they said, oh, the script isn't done. Which is like,
we know.
Yeah, we know. Because you fucking threw the good script out. And then they talked about Avengers. And that was it. They didn't talk about any of... Oh, and they announced the sequel date for Guardians of the Galaxy. And that's it. But we already knew that.
Yeah.
So it was like a wet fart for Marvel.
All right.
So yeah, Comic-Con, everyone. Maybe next year I'll actually go there.
Put that on the news ticker. Marvel farts wet. Shall we move on?
Yeah, let's get past that.
Rom Comic-Con.
Rom Comic-Con?
Yeah.
No, we just watch Harry Met Sally over and over again.
When Harold Met Sally. Sequel. All
right, so Comic-Con aside, all three of us saw movies this past week, so... Yeah. Jeff and Dave will talk about their movies, and I'll briefly touch on mine because it's embargoed until Monday.
Yeah.
Don't touch yours.
Yeah.
I saw Hercules. When did we see the movie? Was it Friday?
Friday.
Okay.
Yeah, Thursday night.
Thursday night.
Yeah, that's right, Thursday night.
Okay, all three of us saw a movie on Thursday night. Yeah. My movie was Hercules.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah.
Hercules!
Is that scene in the movie where Eddie Murphy is there?
It is not.
Oh.
But I was praying some of the rowdy audience members didn't start... cracking that joke.
Did they?
No.
Thank God.
So
preface this by saying, going into Hercules, what were you expecting?
Exactly what the trailer told me was going to happen. It was going to be a epic movie in the vein of like... No, we're not doing epic fail jokes. I won't allow that. The trailers promised like an epic... like journey, sort of like Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, right.
But what I meant like most of all was, did you expect it to be at all good?
Oh no, the trailers promised an epic movie that looked terrible.
Okay,
absolutely terrible.
Kind of like those Wrath of the Titans movies.
That's exact. Or Jack and the Beast, Jack the Giant Killer, whatever that was called.
Yeah, it's just that with better teeth. Is this right. movie?
Yeah, and the CGI looked terrible
in
the trailer.
Really bad.
But. What was shocking was all the CGI happened in like the first 5 minutes of the movie, because they go through Hercules's 12 labors immediately. He's already done them.
Right.
And it turns out that he did them with the help of this band of mercenaries. And as the film goes on, it becomes an ensemble piece where every one of these people in his band of mercenaries is interesting and has their own type of way that they help out in the team.
So they actually are Hercules.
Yes.
Like the Hercules that
we
know.
They're like his PR team.
And The Rock is the most impressive thing in this movie visually, even like more impressive than those terrible CGI effects. He looks like something that a CGI studio created. He is monstrous.
Yeah. He is a beast.
And it's real.
Even in Pain and Gain, he is a fucking monster.
He is enormous, and he's like a marvel to behold on screen. So that is what is visually stimulating about the movie, aside from the sets. The sets are kind of
sexually.
Cool. No, not sexually stimulating, just visually. We don't have to go there.
Yes, we do.
But yeah, it's an entertaining B movie. It's a popcorn flick if I've ever seen one.
Right.
I had fun. My wife went with me. She kind of had fun. We were laughing at some of the things that, like, a lesser movie would take itself seriously trying to pull off, but this movie knows that The Rock has perfect straight white teeth, and when he yells "I am Hercules," it's not a moment to be like gripping your seat and be like, "Oh, this is
just
awesome."
Like a joke.
You're supposed to be like, "Fuck yeah, you're Hercules! Let's fucking do this! Fuck these guys up!"
I gotta admit that, like, after you told me about it and after reading your review on cutprintfilm.com, I kind of want to see this now. I like the idea that it's basically like dismantling his myth. It's like all about like
right. It basically says this guy is just a man.
But
he's
they don't
a
hijack
man.
The myth. They make the myth in the movie.
Right. Okay. They make the myth. His nephew plays the person that kind of keeps this myth going through his storytelling prowess. Okay.
Like that's a real that's
it's
that's
clever. Funny
that's yeah. That's a much more clever idea than this. You would think a Brett Ratner.
This is the best
movie
Brett Ratner film I've ever seen. I'll put it that way.
I wish they
Brandon
had kind of
Tower Heist.
Ugh. I wish they had, Jeff
I'm not
didn't
even going to talk.
I wish they had marketed it like that because I feel like that actually would have been.
Yeah, I don't think they knew how to market this thing because it's so silly and goofy and. I don't know why it was released in the summer. This would probably have done a lot better in spring.
Right. Well, that's cool.
Hercules is fun. Yeah. I don't know if I would recommend you go see it in the theater.
No.
Because it's just a silly, goofy, adventure flick.
Yeah.
But rent it. Buy it for, $10.
I'll definitely Redbox this when it comes out.
Yeah.
So Dave,
$30 million this weekend. That's pretty decent opening.
Well, even though it did okay, it was trounced by the film Dave saw.
Lucy.
Yes.
I had no intention on ever seeing Lucy.
Right, until you made the deal with me. If I go see Hercules, you'll go see Lucy.
And it's interesting because Scarlett Johansson has been in two very good movies this year, but for some reason, I guess it's the marketing of this movie. It just seems bad.
No, it's the premise. The premise is brain dead.
Yeah, the premise is terrible.
We don't use 10% of our brain. Yeah, we use 100%
that is a
of
myth.
It.
I don't know. That kind of bothered me that so many people were like, that's not true. Because it's like, fucking Lord of the Rings isn't true either. But we go into that.
But this is such a hack premise. It's been done time and time again. I've had enough.
It sort of seemed like, based on the trailers, it seemed like that movie Crank, but with Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
It's not.
Well, that's good then. So, tell us about Lucy.
It's like, it starts out, it just throws you right into the fucking movie.
Okay.
She's... If any of you saw Don John last year, where she plays kind of a ditzy, it's that movie with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, where she's his girlfriend and she's just like real Long Island. Well, it's that character, but in Taiwan for some reason. They don't really ever explain it. And they're outside of a hotel and she's arguing with her boyfriend about taking this case in. He's like, just fucking do it. I'll give you $500. You just got to go up to the guy and give him the case. And, it immediately turns into just this fucking crazy action sequence where Scarlett Johansson can't understand what anyone's saying because they're all speaking Taiwan would be Chinese, I guess.
Yes.
But there's no subtitle. So you're experiencing the same confusion she is. And it plays fucking awesome. It's an adrenaline rushing scene. And as you know from the trailer, they put the drugs in her body.
And she becomes super smart.
Yeah.
But when...
It's sort of like My Super Ex-Girlfriend, starring Uma Thurman.
Yeah, she throws a shark through the window. Why did you cheat on me?
Oh, what a good flick. Kill me.
But then she immediately changes characters, which is kind of a cool thing to see in a movie. And it doesn't spend too much time explaining what's happening. But... She gets in this gunfight, and then after it, immediately sits down at a table because the guys were playing poker and they were eating, and she's been locked in this cell, so she comes out, gets in a gunfight with these guys, kills them all, sits down, and just starts shoving all of the food in her mouth because her brain is so smart at this point. She knows that she knows that all she needs is sustenance, and it's kind of cool. It's just a scene of her shoving eggs in her mouth, and then you realize that she was shot in the shoulder, but because her part of accessing your brain is that you'd be able to
shut down pain.
Yeah, you'd be able to pretty much control your pain sensory, and it develops from there. But it's an awesome introduction into. It's just a cool fucking movie. It goes from there. I don't want to spoil the whole fucking thing.
It's silly fun, basically, is what you're saying.
And that's what Hercules is, silly fun.
Yeah.
What would you compare? Because, this movie's directed by Luc Besson, and he made one of the silliest movies ever made, but I love it. It's called The Fifth Element, which is a silly, goofy movie, but I really like that movie.
It's...
How does it compare to that?
This is so hack. It's The Fifth Element meets The Professional.
And that's his other movie, and I love The Professional as well, so...
And it... It's so funny because if you had seen Transcendence, these are two movies trying to do the exact same thing.
It's like a smart, dumb movie,
yeah,
basically.
But the problem with Transcendence was it tried to be a smart movie, and it was a dumb movie, like, at the core of
it. That is why Hercules worked, because it's not trying to be smart.
Right.
It's just, it knows exactly what it is, and it does it.
And that's the thing with the whole brain thing. The movie kind of knows that it's bullshit, but it doesn't matter, because that's the premise. And it kind of goes crazy sci-fi at the end, like a little too wacky, but the whole time it's fun. Like, you're never like, oh, this sucks. It's a cool movie.
Maybe I will see
it. I liked it a lot more than I thought I would.
I'm definitely, I was sort of on the fence, like, maybe I'll see that, but now I kind of really want
to
see it.
I really want you guys to see it so that I can know whether or not I'm hallucinating.
I will watch that.
To know whether or not you're just using 10% of your brain while watching the film.
One other thing about Hercules, real quick, I forgot to mention, is The Rock is not great in it.
So you give the people's elbow?
No people's elbow, but the entire movie, he's just walking around with this grin on his face, and it's just so silly, and you can tell that he's enjoying himself the entire time, and that kind of adds to the fun of the movie. Like, why is Hercules just walking around with perfect teeth, smiling at everything?
Because he's got that lion hat. He's happy about that.
Oh, by the way, he wears that lion hat
the whole
time.
All right, I gotta see this.
When he's not wearing it, not 2 minutes will go by before he puts it on.
Whips it right back.
2 minutes go by where he goes, where's my lion
hat? It's a cool costume.
Maybe this Halloween I will wear a lion hat.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
I hope that becomes
a
thing this
year. Spray tan and then a lion hat. The one last thing I want to say about Lucy is at least Chris and I really enjoyed Under the Skin. You kind of enjoyed it.
I liked it.
But it's that character almost to a T if she had been killing people, like just shooting people like crazy, which is another really cool thing to see.
Yeah,
that's it.
It definitely has piqued my interest.
Chris, what was the movie you saw?
So yeah, the movie I saw,
103 Dalmatians.
Just a great romp.
That's
There's
it.
Two more.
That's all I saw. The movie I saw, it's
a lot of dogs.
I won't go too much into it because it doesn't come out till the first, so we'll talk about it the next episode. But the movie I saw was Guardians of the Galaxy, and my review will be up. By the time this podcast is up, my review will be up. But let me just say, this is officially my favorite Marvel film. This is a delightful, this is a great movie.
It's better than The Avengers?
I think it's better than The Avengers. And I love Joss Whedon, but this is better than The Avengers.
Unlike everybody listening right now, I've already read your review, and I'm excited to watch this movie.
This movie
spoiled for me, so I haven't read it.
I tried really hard to do it, write a spoiler free review. So, but this movie, it's so much fun. A while ago, we were talking about, like, why don't they make movies like Spielberg made, where they're not just for young people or old people? They're for everyone, and that's what this movie is.
Oh, good.
This movie isn't just for like comic book fans or Marvel fans, and it's not just for like kids. This is a movie for everyone. It's got something for like kids will love it. Adults will love it. It's just a fun fucking movie. And this is the first movie this year that I want to go back and see again. So when it comes out on the first, I will be going back to see it again.
Right, and next week, that's what we're going to be talking about is Guardians
of the
Galaxy.
Yeah, all week. We'll probably talk for the whole hour about it.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope you guys like
it. If not, then most of the show will be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Like, yeah, I hope you guys don't go see it and you're like, what the fuck, Chris? You're wrong.
is your favorite Marvel movie? Captain America?
So far? Like,
yeah,
of all of them, I would probably say Winter Soldier.
Yeah,
Avengers was fun. Avengers was a lot of fun, but I'd say Winter Soldier.
Avengers is fun, but that movie has a really simple, stupid screenplay.
It's not
I
as
say.
Interesting.
I really
as
enjoyed Iron Man 3. I think that's my
I actually
favorite.
Liked Iron Man 3 a lot.
Yeah,
I have not seen that one.
I would say before Guardians of the Galaxy, Iron Man 3 was probably my favorite Marvel movie, followed by Avengers.
So
but,
following your formula, this should be my favorite.
I hope so. I really hope you guys like it because I love this movie. Like, I came out of the movie just giddy, and I haven't come out of a movie like that in a long time. Like, I felt, to use a cliche, it made me feel like a kid again.
I love that.
In the best possible way.
Like, you wanted to call James Gunn and be like,
high five,
great
Jimmy.
Job.
I did. Like, I'm grateful for him to make for me. I'm so glad Marvel let him do this. Like,
I know.
I love when movies like that happen.
Like, you can feel, because this is the biggest budget James Gunn has ever worked with. And you can feel making the movie, you can just feel how happy he is to just be throwing all this. this is a, it's a weird movie, and it's just such a fun, weird movie. And you can, and the fact that Marvel would spend so much money on such a big, weird summer movie,
yeah,
it just makes me happy.
I look forward to talking about that next
time. So, yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy.
All right, let's, awesome. Let's do some movie recommendations, boys.
Hell yeah.
Culprit Film Weekly Movie Recommendations.
Well, oh.
It's a blast from the past.
The throwback.
Three adult men here. Well, who's going first?
Jeff, you go first.
Okay. My pick this week is a 1991 film called Delicatessen.
I've seen this.
You've seen it? I kind of knew.
Wait, is this a horror movie?
No.
Was there a horror movie called Delicatessen?
I don't know.
There probably.
Okay. This is directed by Mark Caro, who his only other film is City of Lost Children. I don't know if you ever saw that. He's done TV shorts.
City of Lost Children. That's like a really weird film, right?
Yeah,
it's a weird French movie with Ron Perlman.
He's also
That's the one I always get confused with Dark City.
Okay, they have a sort of similar aesthetic.
Well, this film Delicatessen that I'm recommending was also directed by two directors. Jean-Pierre Jeunet, who I'm going to assume is the actual director, because he has also directed Amelie, City of Lost Children, and my favorite, Alien Resurrection, which is a terrible movie. Don't watch it.
Yeah.
Who's the other director?
It looks gorgeous.
No, there's only two directors on this film.
Two. Okay.
Mark Caro.
Oh, okay, that was the first guy.
Who did City of Lost Children and nothing else other than this film, and the real director, Jean-Pierre Jeunet.
He's probably just did City of Lost Children together with that guy. Okay.
I don't know who the other guy is. Might just be
like his friend who he needs to give some money.
Or he doesn't exist. Yeah. I don't know. He's a ghost.
It's his non-de-plume.
this film, it takes place in a post-apocalyptic world, and it centers on the inhabitants of this single apartment building, where food is scarce.
Yes.
And grain and food is used as currency. And the building's owner is also the chef for everybody. And he serves the people in the building people. But they don't know they're eating humans. So this handyman comes to work for them. And he's going to be the chef's next victim. And the handyman falls in love with the chef's daughter. And she asks for help from these people called the troglodytes, who consider food, not money. And it's just a very weird, visually, I've never seen a movie that looks like it other than maybe Amelie.
Right, yeah.
Like, it's just bizarre, and it's a French movie, and you know how the French are. They're French.
They love snails.
They do. Escargot, right?
Looking at the picture, it's kind of reminding me of Mood Indigo. Like,
really?
And that's another French Michel Gondry.
It's like got a fantastical look. Like, nothing looks like it's of this world. And like I said, it's post-apocalyptic, but, you know, that's kind of secondary. It's really...
The troglodytes? Why does that sound familiar?
It's a term used...
Yeah, they were a real thing.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, yeah, not these people. These people were not real. This is just what they're called.
I hope not.
But, it's a very interesting movie. Kind of bizarre. No real big names. They're all French actors, but... That's it. Delicatessen.
All right. Stop screaming, Chris.
Sorry. I zip my stuff up in my jeans.
Your stuff.
My stuff. I was going to say junk, but I thought, no, I'm more highbrow than that.
That's right. We're going to call it stuff.
You ready?
You want me to go?
Yeah.
All right. My recommendation is the 2002 film May, directed by Lucky McKee. This is a horror film. Lucky McGee, he's made horror films.
Sounds like an Adam Sandler character.
He's made, it does. He's made movies since this, and they're all terrible, but this movie is excellent. It stars Angela Bettis. She plays this young woman who's just, she's sort of timid and shy, and she has an eye condition where her eye is sort of like always cross-eyed, so she needs to wear contacts to correct it. But she's just really shy and quiet, and she works at a veterinarian. But she's also really weird, and she's lonely. And so because she has no friends, she decides to start building one out of human body parts.
Oh.
So the film is sort of it's like a modern take on Frankenstein, but with a female perspective. And it's a really unique and weird and different sort of movie. And it's just – Angela Bettis is fantastic in it as the main character, and it's just – I don't know. It's really different. It's a different sort of horror movie, and it's clever and it's funny, but it's also just disturbing. And there's a lot of cool makeup effects in it as she continues to kill people and cut them up and stitch her body together that she wants to be, you know, her friend, basically.
It's a real coming of age
story. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's
similar to Boyhood.
Yeah, it's a lot like Boyhood, but with more body parts.
All right.
Does she ever complete the thing?
I don't want to spoil it.
Damn it.
You'll have to wait.
What's it called?
It's called May.
All right.
What is that even from?
What? It's a screaming goat.
What year was May from?
2002.
Okay. Because there's probably a few more Mays. I don't want the people to get confused.
It's Angela Bettison, Jeremy Sisto is in it.
Oh, from 6 Feet Under.
Yeah, he's in it.
Excellent.
Where did you get that?
I don't know.
Have you guys ever seen Rush, Howard movie?
Nope.
The one with the car?
Yeah.
No.
Not the car.
It's the one about the talking car, right? His name is Rush Versosky.
Because
there's another movie from the 80s called Rush with Jason Patrick and Jennifer Jason Leigh where they play cops on cocaine.
Oh.
I think I remember that.
That's a good movie. I didn't see the Ron Howard car one.
Well, the Ron Howard car one...
as we will call it from now on.
It's a Formula One movie that revolves around the rivalry between Niki Lauda and James Hunt.
James Thor.
Yeah, it's essentially the Nazi from Inglourious Basterds and Thor.
Okay.
Going at each other.
His rippling abs on display in this film?
And are they sprayed with some type of water or oil to get them glistening?
Yes, on both fronts? Yes. All right.
Anyway, the reason I bring this up, not because I'm recommending it, but because it was a rather boring film.
Oh, okay.
Because it was based on the true story of the rivalry. And then, after I watched that, it piqued my interest, to use Chris's favorite saying.
Interest? I love saying that.
Of Formula One racing. So, I checked out that documentary Senna,
okay,
which you've all probably seen on your Netflix queue. It's the bright yellow one that you scroll by every time.
I always think it's Kill Bill Volume 2.
It's about John Senna, right? The Marine?
Yeah. Yes. The Marine
can't see me.
Enormous jean shorts. about.
And this fucking story of this guy, Ayrton Senna, he's a Brazilian Formula One racer, is a bazillion times more interesting than that bullshit Ron Howard movie that I can't believe they did not make this the movie. They should have just made this because these guys have such Ayrton Senna and this guy Prost, who's a French guy. They have such an insane rivalry to the point where they're like beating the shit out of each other in person. they're like cheating and getting the other two in trouble all the time. And then the movie ends. I mean, it's a documentary. the story ends with the guy, Senna, crashing into a wall at like 170 miles an hour and dying.
Wow.
Oh my God.
And you get to see the crash. Like,
crazy.
Because it was...
When did all that happen?
In the 90s and then up until like... Maybe... I don't know the exact dates. But it's weird because Niki Lauda is in some of these races. Mm-hmm. And the guy James Hunt is the... he's the Formula One commentator, so they play a part in this documentary. It is a very, aside from like the you know, the rivalry aspect of it, it's a very interesting. This guy had an insane life. He was 34 when he died. He won the Formula One championship 3 times and was like the god of Brazil. When you see how many people like are just in love with this guy who you've never heard of, it's insane.
Cool.
It's a very cool documentary.
I'll check it out.
Well,
it's been 12 years.
We're the longest
since
podcast
we started
ever
this
done.
Podcast.
We finally,
we've edited it all together.
We've all grown up into attractive young men.
I apologize for my squeaky voice early on.
What happened?
It was 12 years ago.
I don't understand the joke. I don't understand the premise.
What?
We're falling apart.
What are we doing?
This is our last show. Until next week, when we talk about Guardians of the Galaxy.
We get back together.
Well.
Well.
I wonder when that joke will get old.
Never for me.
Probably 3 weeks ago.
I hope we all learned something tonight. Dave, what did you learn?
I learned, hey, everybody out there, you know, if you had too much to drink, just Just call a cab.
That's right.
Jeff, what did you learn?
I learned how to put on makeup like a real woman. Chris, what did you learn?
Absolutely nothing.
Okay.
Or just download Uber if you need a ride home.
Hey, this is interesting.
What I'm saying is, don't crash into a pole on your ride home.
What? Let's get some plugs out of the way because we didn't do that at the beginning of the show.
Oh, okay.
Go to antifanboy.com for all your antis and fans and boys.
That's right. Go to joystickjerks.com for joys and jerks.
Yeah. And then, you know, when you're done with that, go to Cut Print Film, because that's our site, and we need you to go there.
Go to morelikeradio.com and talk in the chat room, or don't, like we do.
Yeah, just ignore that chat room, because it's a cesspool. Jesus Christ.
Go to our site to download these piano jams.
It'd be your ringtone.
That's right. Or this. I can't get enough of this. I think that's it. I can't do it.
Yeah.
Anymore of this.
All right, guys. It's been a fun week. You know, get out of here.
Yeah. You don't have to go home, but you can't sleep here.
We don't know how to end the show, is what we're saying.
Robert Loggia is tapping his watch.
We'll see you next week.
Jesus Christ.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.